is rarely met with, even in 100,000 million kalpas, having it to see and listen to remember and accept. I vow to taste the truth of the Tathagata's words. Good morning. So I'm going to talk about one of the koan teaching stories and commentary in this book, The Hidden Lamp, which is a modern collection, but a lot of ancient stories. It's 100 of these. It says stories from 25 centuries of awakened women. And so there are 100 of them, and there are commentaries. Each one has a commentary by a modern teacher. And they're very short. It was hard. I'm one of them, and it was difficult. And I feel like this one, I wish that she had said more, but I know she was not allowed to say more. You can see she goes all the way to here, and they wanted to put their own little thing at the end. They did a little poem, the editor, so that's that. And it's interesting. The woman who commented is called Mioke Linda Kane Barrett. Kane Barrett is hyphenated, so I assume that it's probably her maiden name and her husband's last name or something. I don't know. At any rate, Mioke must be her Dharma name. She is the first woman priest in the Nichiren school around here. And Nichiren, there were around the time of Dogen, our Japanese founder, in the early 1200s, there were actually three teachers. There was Dogen, there was Nichiren, and there was a man named Shinran. And they were all living well after Buddha lived, and the common tale was that I don't know, the Dharma would last 500 years from Buddha, and then another, and that would be the good Dharma, and then there'd be the sort of messy Dharma for another 500 years, and then after that, forget about it. And since Buddha lived well before BCE, or before CE, by the time that these guys were alive, we were well into the forget about it. And Dogen, our Japanese founder, that guy right there, said that as soon as you sit down and get quiet and pay attention, Buddha's right there. So there isn't any bad Dharma time. It's just right now. So no excuses. And Nichiren and Shinran kind of thought that people, I've never studied either one of them, so I may be really being unkind. That you couldn't really practice, so you had to find some way to do something that wasn't so rigorous as Zazen, I guess, at least. So Shinran proposed that people simply call on Amida Buddha, the Buddha of the Pure Land, and sometimes that's called Pure Land Buddhism. And their practice is kind of more church-like, I think, than ours. She says, sitting here in full robes after having bowed to the Buddha. Anyway, is more church-like than ours. But it occurred to me, and I think I asked him, if yes, you call on Amida Buddha, but you have to for it to be useful, or deeply useful, you have to completely surrender to Amida Buddha. You have to completely give up and completely mean it with your whole body and mind. Well, that's enlightenment. Mm-hmm. You know, that's... I'm trying to... I have a motto that trying doesn't work, but I do have intentions. And, you know, and one of them is to let go. It's one, that's how, one of the ways I understand bowing, that it's a surrender, but it's not a surrender to anything or anybody. It's a laying my burden down. It's laying down my weapons with which I strive to protect myself and beat others or whatever, that kind of thing, that kind of ego battle that we're just about hardwired to do. Maybe we are hardwired. So I don't know how different that is. And Nichiren advocated, he taught, I don't know if he taught anything but the Lotus Sutra, but certainly that was a primary thing, and the practice involved aligning oneself with the Lotus Sutra. And you've probably heard the chant, because there's an offshoot of Nichiren, a more modern one, called Soka Gakkai, and now they call themselves SGI, which is Soka Gakkai International. But at any rate, Nichiren taught chant, which is Namu Myoho Renge Kyo, which is kind of like I align myself or I throw myself into the Lotus Sutra. And I'm really digressing, but this is very... I hope this is interesting. I think it is. One of the times that we studied the Lotus Sutra here, which is a very fundamental... Have you ever heard of the Lotus Sutra? Do you know? Anyway, it's a very basic text for Mahayana side of Buddhism as opposed to the sort of Vipassana side of Buddhism. A friend of mine, I guess he's a Nichiren priest, I don't remember, but he certainly is a senior practitioner. This is ancient history, because this was 2002 or something like that. I don't know, it was early on. Anyway, this guy came and he talked about the Lotus Sutra, but he demonstrated with us, really. He instructed us in their practice. And I think he used a drum. Nichiren said, you know, you can just do this chanting. And it was very meditative, and it grew out of silence, and it went back to silence. So we were sitting, I guess, in a circle, and the lights were very dim, and he started kind of soft, and we're chanting Namu Myoho Renge Kyo, Namu Myoho Renge Kyo. And then it got louder and louder and louder, and I don't remember if it got faster. It feels like it got faster. And really loud for a while, and then it got softer and softer and softer and softer, and then it was silence. And then we sat in silence for a while. So go figure, how different are they? I don't know. It was wonderful. I'm not sure about the Soka Gakkai folks. They were an offshoot that came out of some business people after World War II in Japan who were anti-clerical, and they didn't like the priests, and I have no idea if they were corrupt priests or bad. I don't know. So that's part of their Soka Gakkai's attitude is no priests, and they study the Lotus Sutra, and they chant, but I don't know if they chant that same way. And they're the people, you know, people say, oh, they chant for things. Those are the people that chant for things. And I think as they mature in their practice, they kind of let that go. I don't know. At any rate, Myokei is a priest in this... where does she say that? She says it. Da 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 da. She was the first Western woman to be ordained as a Nichiren Shu priest. Nichiren Shu means a Nichiren school, where the Soto Shu, or the Soto school. So, okay, so the koan is Chang Jing Jin's No Obstructions, China from the 8th century. Before Chang Jing Jin, ever pure progress, became a nun, she traveled with her mother and family to meet Master Wu Zhu. Chang Jing Jin asked, "I am a woman with the 3 obstructions and 5 difficulties and a body that is not free. I am determined to cut off the source of birth and death. Please teach me." Wu Zhu said to her, "If you are capable of such resolution, then you are a great hero. Why do you call yourself a woman? No thought is thus no male and no female. No thought is thus no obstruction, no hindrance, no birth, no death. At the time of true no thought itself is not. This is none other than cutting off the source of birth and death." When Chang Jing Jin heard this, she stood absolutely still and unblinking. And Mu Zhu immediately knew that she had a resolute mind. She and her mother ordained as Wu Zhu's disciples and became leaders among nuns. No thought, no female, no male. And so Myokei says that that koan speaks to her on different levels, particularly reminding her of challenges that she had had as a practitioner. She says she is Japanese African American woman. Now, I don't know why she's not like Japanese American, African American, or whatever. I don't know. I don't know this person. But at any rate, she, you know, if the way, one of the many ways that racism works here is that if you look at all dark-skinned, you're black. You know, a lot of people are mixed, and they don't look that. They don't have like African kind of features, maybe. But if their skin is that, that's it. So, I don't know how it was for her. But she says, "I've often been reminded in myriad large and small ways that my difference from perceived societal norms makes me less desirable and not worthy of respect." So she gets that. She probably gets it both ways. I've been reading about the Japanese-American experience during World War II. And because she straddled 2 cultures, she often found it difficult to be at home anywhere. And there was no place of belonging. And she felt a lack because of that. And so that the, oh, it's really hard, Chang Jing Jin's statement, "I am a woman with the 3 obstacles and 5 difficulties," is a poignant reminder of what it means to accept our, quote, limitations, unquote, as valid. Women at that time were thought of as unable to attain Buddhahood, that we had to transform into men. And there are stories about these women that become enlightened, I guess, but they immediately transform into a man and then immediately transform into a Buddha. But they have to go through that becoming a man thing. So women were often thought of as, you know, as unclean because we get periods and so on. And so it was hard for a woman to be taken seriously as a practitioner in 8th century China. And it was hard in 13th century Japan when Dogen taught also. But not as hard as this, so that she it was apparently she had her mother's support. I don't know where Dad was, but that she would ask for this. You know, I am determined to cut off the source of birth and death. Well, what is the source of birth and death but attachment? That exactly that that ego battle that I talked about is in terms of when I enact letting go of that when I do a full bow. So Myokye says that that kind of feeling of lack and not having a home and a place led her to Buddhism. She doesn't elaborate. So I guess we could call her up. I don't know. She said, there were many occasions when I struggled to liberate myself from limiting ideas that suggested I was not good enough in some way. And she says something really interesting. She says her father told her that she could do anything, that she could achieve anything. At the same time, he taught her, I think she means without meaning to, that females were less valuable than males. You know, there's the societal lesson that you learn no matter what your parents say. And I don't know how old she is, but I'll bet that she's at least in her, the Myokye is at least in her 60s, maybe in her 70s. So she would have grown up in the 50s and 60s, maybe. And from teachers and others, she says she learned that girls should be nice and not make waves. And that's a common experience. You know, and then, you know, males have that you, boys don't cry or whatever. You have to be tough or you don't even know what your feelings are. That's also true of a lot of, it's partly just our culture, I think. But at any rate, we are taught cultural norms. And I'm familiar particularly with the ones for women. We're taught them as kids. And, you know, my parents didn't teach me that I couldn't do everything. But somewhere I got it. And I had some explicit experiences. In college, I wanted to go into the Foreign Service, and so I was going to learn Spanish and French, because back then French was the diplomatic language. Anyway, and a family friend knew a guy that taught at USC that had been in the Foreign Service or knew about it or something, and arranged for me to go talk with the guy. And I went, and I walked in the door, and he said, oh, they'll never take you. You're too good looking. And that they only took women that were really ugly and unattractive. Because I don't know why. You might get seduced or something and blackmailed. I don't know. I mean, anybody could get seduced and blackmailed. Anyway, I don't know. But I was really hurt and upset, but I didn't challenge it, you know? I just thought, oh, well, I'm not going to bother with French. I've been studying Spanish, and I'd been studying French a little bit, but it was a pain because I always found myself speaking Spanish. And I just thought, why bother? So I just let that go. But it still hurts some, you know, just being told, oh, you're not wanted. And then I remember in the early 64, before the Mississippi Freedom summer, I was interested in going, and I picked up an application at the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee table on the Berkeley campus. And right at the introduction to it, it said, white women are the lowest priority. And you may have heard that Stokely Carmichael once infamously said that the only position for women in SNCC is prone. So at that point, I decided, the hell with you. I mean, at least at that point, I had some pride. I've always regretted, I know a lot of white women that went, and they had amazing experiences and useful experiences. But at any rate, it was, and I think probably still is, often explicit. Now it's probably not quite as explicit because people know they could get sued and so on. But it's real. It's real. So we get taught, is what her point is, we get taught these things, and how do we work with that? How do we practice with that? And she said, for me, these ideas became mental and emotional habits that caused me to separate myself from life and the beauty of all its nuances. I could not access joy, and my heart shut down. So she must have had a lot or not much support. I don't know where she grew up or how much support she had. I don't know. But it just, she changed, but it's just heartbreaking to think of shutting down to that extent. And I can identify with it. It's just not, I think I could always access joy. But at any rate, and she said, I had few friends. But then when she began to study the Dharma, she saw that walking the Dharma path was a means to liberation from limitation, as well as a way, I was almost not going to talk about this because I don't understand what she means. Or maybe I really disagree, I don't know. As well as a way to encounter profound bliss. And that may be a Nichiren word, because it's not a word that I would ever use. There is bliss sometimes when you get quiet and when you sit zazen, especially during a longer time of sitting. That's one word that could describe it. But we, shy away from offering it, because if you sit in order to find bliss, that won't work, and you can't stay there. At any rate, she was able to break free of mental and emotional habits. I discovered the sources of rage, hurt, and loneliness in my life, and learn to strengthen bonds of relationships with others and myself. So it sounds like she, used the Dharma to turn the light inward, and I imagine, I may be projecting my own idea of practice, but that to really look at what those unwholesome habits were, and to loosen her grip on them. And courage, she says, is usually considered a male trait. And Master Wuzhu points this out by calling her a great hero. A great hero is one of the phrases for a bodhisattva, or an enlightening being, somebody who is very dedicated and disciplined and whatever, practitioner. And it was usually used for men. It's clear that she exhibited great courage. Well, she certainly did. Okay. And Wuzhu recognized her pure desire and great seeking spirit and used his words to break the mindset of limitation. Because he saw something in her that maybe she didn't see, or she only sort of saw. You know, she had the courage to go, but she did not have the courage to say, that's bullshit that I'm a woman of five limitations and whatever it is. And then Myokei points out that, you know, nothing has unchanging self. And that's what all that is about. No thought is thus no male, no female, no obstruction, no hindrance, no birth, no death. And yet not even, no thought itself is not. He's just pointing at, and don't get caught with the words, he's pointing at no limitations. He's pointing at not grasping onto your idea of who you are. Letting all of your ideas go. And the big one is that there's no difference, she says, talks about, between ourselves and the Buddha. In a way, that's a lot what the Lotus Sutra is about. It's that you already are of the nature of Buddha. You don't have Buddha nature, you are Buddha nature. And the hard thing is to believe it, you know, and that it's the most useful thing you can do is to express yourself as a Buddha. If you want to be useful, but the thing is, you work on that without wanting it, without grasping after it, because you can't grasp, it doesn't work to grasp after it. But why wouldn't you want to, you know, the best for yourself in that sense, in the sense of wanting to be a Buddha, because a Buddha is the most useful thing that I could imagine being. So that Master Wu Zhu is acknowledging that Chang Jing Jin, as she is already endowed with Buddha nature and doesn't have to overcome anything. And he's also saying she just has to let go of all this extra stuff that she's piled on herself and that we do. That's our job, is to let go of all this stuff that we pile on ourselves. It's easy to say, and not so easy to do. So, you have any comments or questions?
What year did she comment on, or what was her name?
The subject of the koan or the author of the commentary? I don't know.
She was the mixed one?
Yes.
Yeah.
Double mixed.
Double mixed. What's her name? Yeah.
She says she's the resident priest at Myokenji in Houston.
Oh, interesting.
She's a Dharma teacher in the prison system and facilitates dialogues on diversity and conflict resolution. And this book's been out for a little while, so.
And she's Nichiren.
Yes. Yes, which is not Soku Gakkai. 213 was the copyright.
Okay.
So we could find out.
Yeah.
She
has a lot more out there.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure you could Google her. But also our friend, Galen Godwin, is the abbot of the Houston Zen Center and probably knows her or knows of her.
I'll be going out to visit. My friend is like...
In Houston?
In Houston. She's like, come on out. I'll fly you out here. I'll go to the...
Well, you can visit both of them.
Yeah.
I'd report back. Anybody else?
So Nichiren is synonymous with Pure Land?
No.
Shinran,
mm-hmm. Pure Land.
Okay.
Nichiren Buddhism.
Okay.
Dogen, Soto Zen.
Us.
Yeah.
Wait, when you said Nichiren?
That's what the school is called.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. I'm not sure what my question is. But it's interesting. I'm just thinking of it in terms of the koan, right? When mm-hmm. He says, no thought, no woman, no man, right? There were other things.
Yes, he's had quite a list. Right, it was like the Diamond Sutra.
That's being said in the sense of, like, no eyes, no ears, no nose, no tongue, blah, 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 right? Like,
yeah.
It's that same no concept.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm also working, I told you last week, right, I'm working with these students in the university that are all about there's no gender binary and
right
and but they're the opposite. It's all about identity.
Mm-hmm.
It just struck me as interesting that because they're very feisty and they're difficult to work with.
Well, they're, you know.
You make a mistake and you say they, and oh, gosh.
Right. They're very attached.
Yes, very.
But yeah. They think that they're not, yeah. Which makes it hard. And it's also hard. I mean, I have a hard time with they, and I think, you know, I completely understand it, and intellectually I think it's fine, but you know, and I'm reading something and then I see, and I can't, then you have to stop and think about, is this a reference to to Sally that was just, you know, two things, that, or are we talking about something else now? Stuff like that. But I'm old.
Yeah, I'm just challenged.
I get to be cranky.
Of how to work with, because it's like very ideological.
Mm-hmm.
And
they're sophomores.
Yeah,
they're
undergraduates, and they have to rebel against something, and they see me in the position of, you know, I'm the institution, and I'm the oppressor, and you know, it's just very challenging. And I wish I could give them that koan, actually.
Well, why can't you?
Maybe I'll ask to copy it, write it down.
And you can learn from them. Because they're raising really useful and important points.
Are they saying the same thing as this con? That's what I'm not.
Well, I'd be surprised, but maybe they are, or they would like to. You know, but it's like the holding on.
Yeah.
I have a friend. We were in the monastery together, and he's. I guess he was a vegan then. He was certainly a vegetarian. No, he was a vegan, but he worked with not, and he was kind of political about it, but he wasn't a proselytizer about it. And he worked with not allowing himself to be identified that way, and he. One time in a question and answer with a teacher who happened to be my teacher, this guy said something. I remember some of the end of this discussion, but I don't remember how it came, but Mel told him that, my teacher told him, eat cottage cheese. And Charlie said, what's in it? And Mel said, lots of little beings. And that was the end of that exchange. And then Charlie, whose name now uses his Dharma name, which is Kokyo, Anyway, I don't, maybe from then on, I'm not sure if he had done it before, but he would sometimes take a little bit of, say, yogurt or whatever was in the, that was a dairy event. And when he was head student and everybody got to ask him a question, a young woman who was very, very militant and very political about her, both her veganism and her dedication to saving the redwoods, which is also admirable. But at any rate, she said to him, "Why are you a vegan?" And he said, "I'm not a vegan," which was interesting to me. He just was, you know, he was not going to take on a persona. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, it's difficult. It's very hard, and maybe you can have a real conversation with him, I don't know, but it's very difficult to have beliefs and not to be so attached to them or not let yourself be defined by them. You know, even being defined by not having a definition. Mm-hmm. And there's no way, because that's how our minds work. We just want, we want to side. We want to pick and choose. I'm trying to stop talking, but I am failing. I'm teaching up in Sacramento the old poem, the Xin Xin Ming, which starts off, "The great way is not difficult. Only avoid picking and choosing." And then you laugh. He's like, "Well, let's be out." But this woman had this great example. She said she had watched the Super Bowl, but she didn't care very much about either team. But she was with her friends, and so she just watched it as a game. And it was interesting. It was pretty or whatever. But she never had a side. And I thought that was a great example. You know, and then afterwards, my friend Jim Hare, who lectures here from time to time, Jim said that he realized that when he watched the football game, he always chose a side, you know, even if it wasn't sort of his team. And I realized I tend to do that too. I don't set out to, maybe, but I don't watch it that much. But sometimes I find myself watching one where I don't really care, and I do. I find a way to pick a side. So it's very hard not to do that. Mm-hmm. It's just me and you, us and them. You know, it feels safer maybe to have, you know, a side, a tribe, something, you know.
There's that thing that Jerry Seinfeld said years ago where he was like with people just bidding and people going to the team with the highest bidder. He's like, ultimately, you find that you're just rooting for laundry. He's like, I don't know, red, let's go.
Yeah, well, that's what we want to do. Yeah. Okay, we got to stop. We can keep on talking at tea. Or past. No. And beings. How about?
Things are numberless, I vow to save them.